Well, happy Thursday, everyone. Let's grow together. Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. It is our weekly call-in show. And, of course, I have with me this morning Mr. Matt Workinger. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Pam.
And also Ms. Rachel Fender. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Pam. How are you?
We're doing well. Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Got some snow plowing done yesterday and spent the evening at the hospital.
What?
Yeah, my dad having some health issues, so had to take him down there yesterday evening and get him checked in and stuff. So hope he heals quick.
Yeah, we do too. We do too, for sure. Our prayers are with you, man, for sure.
That's
always
that.
Yeah, that's always tough. I know.
Yeah.
So was that snow plowing stuff one of the first of the season for you, or how did or
so
first in a long time?
Christmas Eve, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas Eve and plowed, and then about a week ago, we pushed one night, too. So that's push three. We average about, in the state of Ohio where we're at here, we average about six pushes a year is the average.
So really? Okay.
We're halfway through.
Yeah.
There are some years where we push two or three times, and there are some years we push 10 or 15 times. So from the way the weather's going, I think we're going to be more towards that lower end than the higher end this year.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, you know, I looked ahead at the forecast, and, I mean, fairly mild, you know, the next couple of weeks. The groundhog comes out next Thursday.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Already?
Holy yeah.
Moly. I know.
Yeah, we're almost through January.
Yeah, it'll be February 1st next Wednesday, and Groundhog Day is a week from today.
Yeah. Oh.
Nice.
Next time we talk, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be celebrating Groundhog Day together.
Here we go.
Did you know that they're inducting Punxsutawney Phil into the Meteorological Hall of Fame?
Oh, my Lord.
That makes a lot of weathermen mad, right?
Bill Murray, too, right?
Yeah, Bill Murray, too. See, Punxsutawney Phil has spawned so many things, movies, drama, you know, all kinds of good stuff. I thought that was hilarious. I thought, if I'm a weather guy, I'm a little bit mad. Yeah, I'm a little salty about that. Yeah, no doubt about it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, so fill us in, Matt. What's happening at the nursery? What's keeping you busy these days?
Well, this time of year, we're doing all of our, the book work, the preparation work. We're packing away Christmas right now and inventorying it. And the girls just got back from their buying trip to buy all the new Christmas stuff for next year. That happened about a week ago. So now it's about getting Christmas packed up and put away and unpacking all the chemicals and fertilizers and getting the store set up for spring again. Our greenhouse still has houseplants in it. We've got a pretty good selection of houseplants out there for the middle of winter. And I think the first trucks of plants are actually going to start coming in here in about 4 to 6 weeks. So
wow.
We're getting close.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, like we said, you know, with the whole spring situation. But, you know, how many people do you think have actually really sat down and thought about what they want to do outdoors this coming spring?
Most are just recovering from the holidays and getting everything cleaned up, doing some winter cleaning in the house. So
yep.
I don't know that there's been a lot of thought towards spring, but it's a good time of the year to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, do your preparations, your planning. If you want work done at your home, absolutely now is the best time of the year to call. Meet with one of our designers and let our designers work up a plan or a design for you. We can do things in phases, and that's how we do it with a lot of our customers. We'll design an entire landscape, outdoor kitchen, patios, fire pits, seating walls. But we can work on it in phases. The whole project doesn't have to be done at once, and we can pick away at it over the course of a few years to have exactly what you want. And if we do it right, then we don't have to work over top of something we've already got done. So the planning process is very important to alleviate problems down the road.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you have to think about, you have to allow for weather too, right? Because, you know, everything could change. We could have really dry, we could have really wet time.
Yeah, and when the wet slows us down, I think landscaping in general, not just Roar's Nursery, but all landscapers out there, if we have a really, really wet spring, it's you're still out there working in it, but your productivity just isn't as good because things are taking longer and everything's harder when the ground's really soft and mushy. So, yeah, it's part of the – when we schedule jobs – it's a rough scheduling because you don't know what the weather's going to do, and the weather definitely determines how efficient your guys are out on a job, right?
And how long winter is going to stick around, you know?
Yeah. About first week of March, I'm going to start praying for spring because I've got about 20 trucks scheduled semi-load the trees for March, and it's not fun unloading those in a blizzard.
Oh, no. Yeah, we don't want you to do that. We certainly don't want you to do that. But sometimes, like, you know, my mom's birthday is St. Patrick's Day, and sometimes around her birthday, there's always, like, you know, what I always call, like, a last hurrah sometimes.
Or sometimes it can be like, there's been times it's been like 75 degrees or something on St. Patrick's Day.
True.
There is that one extreme or the other right there on in the middle of March.
Yeah.
Remember one year on the 20th of March, we got 20 inches of snow. It was one of the bigger snows I've ever plowed in my time plowing in the last 25 years. And that was just unload trucks all day, plow snow all night, unload trucks all day.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I bet that was a roughness. That's tough. I just want to remind listeners, too, right now, if you want to give a call, if you have any questions about planning ahead or anything like that or something that's currently going on at your house, just give us a call at 330-450-1480. We'll take your calls. And also, of course, you can send me an email, pcook@whbc.com, and I'd be more than happy to ask questions for you. Have you noticed, Matt, anybody, and maybe it's a little too early for this, but you know, are there going to be any trends, new things that you think people are going to gravitate towards this upcoming spring season?
So there's been a ton of new construction, and whenever there's new construction, privacy screens always end up being one of the top things that we sell the following year because there's neighbors where there wasn't neighbors before, and good screens make good neighbors. That becomes probably one of the biggest trends I think we're going to see this next year is evergreens and privacy screens and things like that. Also wanted to mention, this is a time of the year where the deer actually do a lot of feeding on our shrubbery up around the house because once the snow's down, a lot of that available forage for those deer are covered up by that snow. So we do have complete lists here at the nursery of deer-resistant plant material. And if deer are a problem in your area, making sure you're using plants that they don't really want to eat on anyways will help prevent any winter damage this time of year. Again, that's in that preparation and planning process.
Yeah, that's one of the main questions we get asked a lot is, you know, what's a deer-resistant plant? And not, I mean, if they're hungry, they're going to eat, you know, almost anything. But there are things that they gravitate towards.
Yeah, there's some things that like chocolate cake to them. So if you put burning bush out there or yews or winter creeper or hostas, these are things that like chocolate cake to affect. Deer are going to be out there munching on these things and chewing them down to the ground.
Oh, wow. Like a goat, almost.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
and that's,
they got my tulip last year.
Oh, man. And honestly, I never knew there was something that was deer resistant. I mean, I just thought you had to kind of spray for them or something like that.
There are sprays and you know, granulars, repels on, some things like that you can put down, but that's something you need to repeatedly do. So there's labor and cost that goes into reapplying those items. If you start with plants they don't really prefer to eat anyways, it's much, much less likely that you'll have damage and have to do any of those other steps.
Okay, so that's just another part of the planning process, along with choosing what you want. I mean, I don't know. I guess also, remember the mistakes made. I got to say, I planted something in the front of my house that never should have been planted there because it doesn't get a lot of sun. And I just didn't even really think about it, you know, when I went ahead and did it. And it just didn't do very well. And so that's frustrating. You spend money and you go and plant them, take the time, and then, you know, they just so figuring out what you have, you know, as far as like sun and non-sun and getting all that, all your ducks in a row for that's probably a good idea.
When our customers come in here, my guys ask them a barrage of questions.
We give a lot of questions.
A lot of those questions we ask the customer, we need that information so we can make the right recommendation. We need to know how long and wide is the planting bed that we're working in. How tall do you want the shrubs to get, under 4 foot, over 4 foot? We're going to ask a lot of questions, but the one that stumps them every time and sets them back on their heels is how many hours of sunlight does this area get?
Yeah.
And it's one of the super important questions for success. And everybody kind of sits back on their heels for a minute. They're like, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
That is a good, like, something to bring up, too. A lot of times people think, you know, it's full sun in the morning, and it's not necessarily, usually the morning sun's a little bit less intense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, you kind of have to look at that. Just because it's getting sun until, you know, 1 o'clock, noon or 1 o'clock, that does not necessarily mean full sun. We consider that more of a shade area.
Or part sun, right?
Or part sun, yes, yeah. So it just kind of depends.
Yeah.
So.
And there are plants that'll do good in any environment, like the arborescence style of a hydrangea will do good in sun or shade or part sun. It's very versatile. Oak leaf hydrangeas are the same way. Now, the macrophylla hydrangeas, which are the big blue flowers, those guys really need part sun, morning sun, cool sun. They do not like the afternoon sun. So when we ask these questions, when people come in, we want to make sure they have success. Their success is our success.
Yeah.
And that's why those questions are asked. And it's important that we ask those questions. If we make a recommendation without understanding where it's going, there's a chance that something could be missed. And we want to make sure that when they go home, they spent money, they go home, they take this plant grown by northern growers. We know it's hardy here, but it still has to be grown in the right environment.
Well, you know, I realized later what my mistake was, because I knew that, you know, I had to figure out how much sun. And so, yeah, I looked at, like, the sidewalk in front of the bed and the sun. But there's an overhang to the house.
Correct.
Oh, yep. little things like that. Yeah, you kind of...
Or big shade trees. A lot of times if people are in here in March or early April before the trees leaf out and they're looking out, they're like, oh, I get a ton of sun. But by June, not a ton of sun.
Yes.
So the environment changes. Even the sun itself, as it moves through the sky, it really changes where it's shining when it's those planting beds. So making sure that we have plants that are adaptable to a bunch of different environments. If your environment changes drastically throughout the year, we want to make sure we get you plants that can handle that change.
All right. That's good stuff. All right. We're going to take our first break. And again, if you would like to give us a call, please do. We'd love to talk to you. 330-450-1480. Send an email to pcook@whbc.com. It's Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. I'm sorry, guys. All right. Yes. Again, this is Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. It is our weekly call-in show, and we're happy to take your calls at 330-450-1480. We also will ask questions for you if you're a little shy from the phone. I'll just send it to my email, pcook@whbc.com. We know this guy is not shy from the phone. He's on our first up call list this morning.
Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Al.
Good morning. Good morning. No, I'm not
good
shy.
Morning.
I mean, you got to ask questions. It's how you learn.
That's right.
You can't be shy.
Absolutely.
So, first of all, real quick, because I have my gardening question. But Matt, I was at the Massillon Northwest match last night. Great match.
Yeah.
Great wrestling. Great wrestling last night. Yes.
I'm sad I had to miss it.
Yeah, Northwest pulled it off, 39-36. They beat Massillon. Good wrestling.
Good for them.
Anyways, yeah. Here's my question, because you guys are talking a lot about shade. Well, I live in shade sun area. I have a large oak tree in front. I have a large oak tree in back. And then luckily my neighbors. Well, at the time I was upset because I love trees. But she cut both of her trees down the back, which gave me a little more sun. And, Rachel, I was able to plant those perennials I bought from you last year in that nice sun area. They're going to do really well there. So they'll mix
great.
In good. But that part will be my sunnier area. But the majority of my house is a lot of shade. Now, I like to play around with impatience. Now, I still like my annuals here and there, but every year it's impatience, because impatience, I thought, do well. The flower stays bloomed all summer. But can you guys recommend something besides impatience that will give me that long-lasting flower? It might be a little bit different, because every year in the same spots, I put those impatience.
Yeah, and you do think that you're kind of limited with shade flowers. But, yes, there are a lot of different things. I mean, there's begonias, and they're kind of similar as far as bedding plants. They do similar, and they do give a lot of color. New Guinea impatiens are also I love New Guinea impatiens. They're a little bit brighter. They're very tropical looking.
Totally different look than a standard impatiens, though. Where they're technically in that family, but they look completely different.
Yeah, they're very bright and vibrant, very tropical looking. And they can almost get kind of bushy towards the end, too. So that's a great substitute for a shady area.
And
also, too, a lot of different I like a lot of different textures and colors with the leaves. Sometimes with shade plants, you kind of have to not necessarily sacrifice the flowers, but you can add a lot more colors with different leaves like coleus and like Rex begonias. And but there are definitely a lot of different options you can you can do that'll give you some good color there.
Okay.
Oh, shade's one of my favorite. I love shade plants.
Yeah, and I bought, actually I bought, I wish I knew the name of it. I bought one of your shaded perennials. I was surprised that it was mostly for shade. It was absolutely beautiful. I can't remember the name, but matter of fact, I will probably call early spring to make sure you'll have some more of those. Cause then these things, they were nice. But I forget the name. Go figure.
Yeah.
But they really were nice.
There's a lot of really beautiful coral bells that have incredible colors. Sometimes the shade stuff's more like the
I know what
like
it
the
was.
Begonias. It's just some of that shade stuff just has incredible foliage. And while you may not have a bloom, that foliage is absolutely spectacular as well.
I want to say I think it was anemone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, anemones. Okay.
I think you do.
Yeah.
That's
my garden is, now that those trees have been cut down, that actually gave me more sun. So, in a way, it was good she cut the trees down, but I hate seeing trees getting cut down. But,
I do, too.
But it did give me the sun that I probably need. So
yeah, your garden will actually do significantly better now that it's got more sunlight. Most of the garden plants are full sun plants.
But it is hard to see them come down. I am with you there.
Oh, yeah. All right, that's all I got. Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate
Thanks
the call.
Call.
Thanks.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So answer me this about the shade things, you know, the New Guinea impatiens and things like that. Those are all more, I think what you called, Rachel, bedding plants. That they don't get tall. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, the bedding plants are more like, stuff you would get in the flats and that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
The regular, you sometimes do see New Guinea embedding, but they don't get very tall. So
I guess that was my mistake. That's what because I was trying to find something that got a little taller that, you know, was for shade. And I didn't do very well.
Well, there are things out there for sure. So
yeah, we're going to have to ask more questions. See, that's Al's right about that, because if you don't ask questions, you just guess and you don't know, then you don't get help. Then it's, you know, it just doesn't work out. So,
and sometimes just going to the internet, you get too many answers, you know, and you're all over the place.
Conflicting answers too.
Yes. Different areas.
Probably the hardest thing with the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, how many times do people come into Roars and you have to say, yeah, that's not really the right thing?
A lot of hardiness issues there. People come in, they're like, oh, they say this grows here. I'm like, in a perfect environment on the east side of the house, super protected, yes, but where you want to plant it, it's not going to do good.
Yeah.
And so we just saved them $50-$60 because they're not going to take this plant and plant it in an area where we know it's not going to live.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, we're going to take a break for the news. And again, if you would like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you, 330-450-1480. And also you can email me and I'll be more than happy to ask questions for you, pcook@whbc.com. It's Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. All right, welcome back. It is a Thursday morning, and of course, it's Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. It's our weekly call-in show. I have Matt and Rachel with me this morning. I'm Pam Cook, and guys, we're going to go to the phones. We have Shirley and Perry. You are on the air with Roar's Nursery. Go ahead.
Hello. I wanted to ask a question about Christmas cactuses. I have three different ones, and they were so pretty when I first bought them and put them in the ground, and I even transplanted one, but then they just don't do very well, and they get buds once in a while occasionally during, like, these weeks now in February, close to February, And some of the buds, they don't bloom. They just fall off. Is there anything special you're supposed to be doing for them? Or?
Well, a lot of times if the buds are falling off, a lot of times it can be a watering issue. If you did transplant it and put it into a bigger container, it's not going to require as much water as it would if it was pot bound. So did you repot it recently?
The one I did, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Is that one that's falling off? Because a lot of times that is, they don't need a lot of water, but at the same time, it could be not enough water. Sometimes
the one little one that I have in the window, I don't have much window space to put them in, but it seems to get drier than the other two, and it's in a smaller pot, too, and it's got a little bud on now, but I don't know whether it'll bloom or not.
It should. I mean, honestly, but a lot of times that is the case. If it's too much water or too little water, they can shrivel up and fall off. And sometimes, too, with the lighting in the house can mess with the buds because they're used to being in dark a certain time of day. So if it's dark outside and you have it in an area and you have a lamp on or something like that, that also can mess up the buds because it's still thinking it's daylight.
Oh, well, no, I don't have them near a lamp, but
okay,
they're just in the room. But all right, then. I just thought, well, maybe there's something I should be giving to the ground or something.
Not necessarily, no. It's probably a watering issue. If you want to take a picture and bring it into one of our locations, we'd be happy to look at it because sometimes seeing a picture of it can help. Or even a sample of it or something like that. But it does, like, just without seeing it, that's kind of what it sounds like to me. It could be, you just want to check and make sure, it's completely dry before you water it. So,
okay. I'll try that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, hopefully I helped. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. All right. I got an email from Pat, and we're talking about the New Guinea impatiens again. And Pat wants to know, do they need sun or shade or both? And Pat says, I have an area that is mostly shade with a little midday sun.
They would be fine for that. There are two different varieties. There are some that are called sun patients that are, they were bred to be more into full sun areas or more sun area. So if it's getting a little bit more sun than shade, it'd be something like that. But they look exactly the same as a regular New Guinea. And just New Guinea impatiens, they would do fine in that area. If it's just getting a little bit of filtered sun in the afternoon, it should be okay. You just don't want it to be like a really, really hot sun for a couple hours.
Okay, and this is going to be a really silly question. I don't know, maybe not, but, because we do know that the sun changes through seasons, but so, like, if you look at how much sun is happening in the front of your house right now, it's probably not going to be that way in June. Is that right?
Right. Yep.
Correct. Yeah. So it is hard to gauge, and sometimes you do need almost a whole season to kind of really see how that area goes throughout it, because as the sun does wane, it's not as strong or stronger.
And with your annuals aren't really going to even be put in the ground till the middle of May, usually beginning middle of May.
True.
And so the sun from that point through the summer months, that's the area, that's the time.
That's your target, yeah.
That's your target. That's when you want to see how much sunlight that area is getting. And if you're using a type of plant that is versatile, like some of the New Guinea impatiens can take sun or shade, that may be the way to go, choosing a plant that can adapt to the changing environment. There's some that will adapt well and other ones that struggle.
Okay, well, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. The other thing I was thinking about, because I know people who do this, and I have never done it, but there are a lot of folks who start their seeds in the house.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know when to start doing all of that?
A little early, probably.
Does kind of depend. I mean, I know that there's a lot of old, like, tricks and stuff that you start, teas, I think, around St. Patrick's Day or something like that. I know that there's little, phenology targets that you can, like, look and see. But it does kind of depend. But it is a little early. It's usually around, March. Yeah, like mid-March when you would start really anything. Because if you do start them too early, then you run the risk of them getting leggy, and yep. and stretching and all that. So
okay. Yeah.
You'd ask me, Pam, what was going on here at the nursery. One of the things I got to do this last week is I went down and taught the horticultural class down at Jackson High School. That was pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
Really good, really good. Had a lot of kids. They stayed engaged the whole time. Learned a couple tricks from the teacher. He bribes them with blow pops. I like it. I'm going to pick up a box for when I go out to Glen Oak.
That's hilarious.
Next Tuesday, I'm teaching out at Glen Oak, teaching their horticulture classes. I go in and I teach a class on aquaponics and hydroponics and fish health. And we actually take a fish in and do a dissection on the fish and show them how, like, the scales of a fish actually have rings on them like a tree. And so you can pull a scale off a fish, look at it on a microscope, and count the number of rings. That's how many years old that fish is.
And really? I never knew that.
You can
isn't that weird?
You can see bigger gaps in the rings where the fish had a good growing year or a less good growing year. Just like on a tree, you can see the years where the environment was perfect for that tree to grow, and there's a big gap between the rings. You can see that exact same thing on fish.
Wow, I love that. So, you know, I'm also very curious about the reaction of the kids. And then I would imagine that there are some students who, you know, kind of want to make this their life's work, maybe?
There are some, yes. I mean, we're in those horticultural classes. You're going to have a mix of everybody in those classes. Some glazed over there trying to stay awake, and you've got other ones that are engaged the whole time asking questions. Well, for us, we're trying to attract employees here that want to be in the industry. And not because mom and dad are making you go get a job, but because you want to be here. You want to learn. You want to grow. And there was a young boy and girl down there that were just engaged the whole time. The one kid asked me to look at their hydroponic system, give them some pointers. And so both these kids are going to stop up and grab an application. And we're going to do the same thing over at Glen Oak and try to make sure we get the brightest and the best. That's going to help us grow as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I would imagine that for young people who are, you know, going down that career path, they may not even know where to go or how to start things off or how to approach it.
Oh, and when you get into a horticultural class, it's so broad. I mean, there's
so much
perennial
to it, yeah.
Trees, shrubs, and a lot of the teachers don't have, I mean, there's so much to know. They don't, it's like ponds and aquatics is kind of a specialized thing. And so I can go in there and talk to them and show them a different part of the industry that they may not see in any other typical normal classes.
And to be honest, when I was, it was floriculture and stuff like corsages and boutonnieres and stuff like that. And it's like, what? I mean, it was part of it, but still it's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
What
would you say, Matt, what would you say attracts them the most or, you know, gets their attention?
Because there's live animals in the pond stuff, I think it creates some interest no matter what. Like we took a chemical down there the other day and we actually put the fish into a separate tank of water and showed them how we knock the fish out where we can take samples off a live fish and then we put it back in the fresh water and they got to watch it recover. And so there's just a lot of interest in that end of things because it's outside the norms. It's not, you know, what potting mix do you have? How well is your drainage? Some of that stuff's kind of dry.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, we all have parts of our career that are dry, right?
Absolutely. And it's part of it, and you want them to learn that, but you want them to see that there's so many unique, mm-hmm. interesting things that are so different that they may not be exposed to in a typical course because maybe that person doesn't have a lot of knowledge in that area. So I can go in and I can talk to these different hort schools and kind of broaden their horizons onto what's out there. And then actually in March, we're going to be going up to Tri-C College. I'm going to teach a class up there on what buyers want from growers. It's actually a growers class. Now, these kids are paying to be there, so I expect full engagement.
Yeah, exactly. If not, big trouble.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
but
wow.
we're going to talk to them about, you know, there's a pyramid where you're looking at the quality of the plant, the price of the plant, and then the relationship that you build with that client and how important each of those are and how they interact with each other. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely is. There's no doubt about it. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Back to the phones. We have Jerry in Canton South. You are on the air with Roar's Nursery. Go ahead.
Hey, I've got a question on daffodils. Just, I have a nice bank along here that I planted a bunch of daffodils doing it. It's a beautiful thing in the spring. I noticed last week they're up about 3 inches. Is that going to hurt anything?
It shouldn't. No. I mean, honestly, that it is kind of normal sometimes. It's weird that it must be like in a nice little warm spot there, but it should not hurt them. It definitely won't mess up the blooming or anything. They're just a little ahead of the game. So
the cold will shut them back down, and it's amazing. The sunlight this time of year can really heat the ground up significantly more than the areas that are in the shade. So we'll see that where bulbs that are in a brighter, sunnier area definitely will pop and push. But most of the time, they'll get up to about that 2 to 3 inches, and they'll kind of shut back down and just stay there dormant until the temperature gets fully right.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. I was kind of concerned because, you know, the wall.
Yeah,
it is kind of protected. It's on the edge of a woods. It gets an afternoon sun, but not in the mornings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might be just enough just to get them warmed up. So, but no, they should be just fine.
Good. I'm glad to know that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
It's amazing how this time. How the sun can affect the ground temperature. You don't really feel the sun. Like, you think about the sun when it's 95 degrees out in July and you're in the sun, you're like, oh, man, that's hot.
Yeah.
This time of year, like, I went down and was plowing some driveways yesterday, and there's two driveways literally 100 feet apart, both flat, both the same size. Houses are in the same positions. One's blacktop and one's concrete. The blacktop one was completely melted off. The concrete one had 2 inches of slush on it. And that was just the day before that asphalt got hot in that sun. Not that we think about things getting hot this time of year, but it warmed up more in that sun, and it melted that snow off.
Actually, when we were talking about Groundhog Day and stuff, that's when you really start to kind of notice, you know, the days are getting longer and this you know, staying lighter later.
Yeah.
So we're really starting to, it's when you start to really start to feel that spring push is coming.
Kyle. Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely. All right, we're going to take our final break this morning. And again, if you would like to give us a call, talk to Matt, talk to Rachel, 330-450-1480. Again, it's Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. All right, it is just about 8 minutes before 10 o'clock, and we are wrapping up our final segment on Let's Grow Together with Roar's Nursery and Garden Center. Matt and Rachel with me this morning. And if you have a question, we can probably get in maybe a couple more calls. Again, 330-450-1480. So, Rachel, I always ask Matt, like, what's he doing around there, you know? like, I'm checking up on him to see if he's working or not, you know. But at this time of year, what kinds of fun things do you get to do?
Well, to be honest, I've been at home a lot more.
Yeah, so I would get that.
Nice. But, yes, but a lot of the cleaning up of the greenhouse and, you know, taking care of the house plants, it's always nice to do that this time of year, too. And just getting ready for next year, you know, pre-ordering perennials and that sort of thing, finding the new stuff and all the pre-stuff.
Yeah.
So, which is always kind of fun, like the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know.
What do you look forward to the most?
To be honest, I do love that, you know, the first couple of days when we go back and when we get pansies in. I think that's one of because it's just that smell of the spring.
Yeah.
You know, just that kickoff in those first couple warm days. It's just
that's funny. For me, it's the first load of mulch that comes in. Dump that 100 yards of mulch out of that back of the truck. That smell hits you in the face. You're like, oh, it's go time.
Woohoo.
Yep.
I have never heard that out of anybody.
No, yep. That's definitely a unique Garden Center person thing, for sure.
You know what we should create? We should create a candle that smells like mulch. What do you think?
There we go. Fresh dumped mulch.
Yeah.
I don't think that would sell real good. That's a small market you're aiming at there.
Oh my gosh, I think that's right. But no, you're right about that though. That is a certain signal of spring. Is that mulch smell? You brought pansies up. It just jogged something in my brain. Always thinking about pansies and petunias. I get them confused all the time.
Pansies are earlier. They like it really cool.
Petunias like it really hot.
Oh, really? So, okay.
That's one thing to kind of, yeah. And they do look a lot, they do look completely different. But pansies are always good to see early.
They recede a little bit sometimes, too, don't
mm-hmm.
they?
They do.
Yeah, so you'll get a receding out of a pansy that you may not see out of a petunia.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones.
Might not be in color, but.
And take this call. We can fit this call in. Norm is in Florida. He's going to make us all feel really bad right now, but you're on the air, Norm. Go ahead.
I got a question. We spent a summer up there at Guilford Lake, and I got two lots, you know, and I usually, once a year, I just put some to kill the dandelions because nobody up there, you know, does much with their yard. They're all just up there partying for the summer.
Yep.
Is there anything else that I should be doing to that yard?
So fertilization's important. If you can put some fertilizer down, and the organic fertilizers sometimes tend to last a little longer than the typical normal fertilizers do. So Milorganite is one I use on my own yard. Especially if you're putting it down later in the summer when it's hot, it's a very slow release, longer lasting fertilizer, and it's very high in iron. So it'll make their grass a rich, dark green color, but it doesn't make it grow a lot. Because I like cutting the grass the first pusher or cut or two of the year, but after that, it's just a pain in the rump. I got other stuff to do.
I got a riding mower. I mow it when I'm up here, but when I'm gone, I have a guy that mows it, you know. But I just
and also, when you said you treated for dandelions. Make sure you treat it the right time of the year.
I put on the beginning of the year when I get up there, and then that's all I put on it.
Yep, so you don't want to treat dandelions usually till around first, second week of May. You want the plant to really be actively growing good before you put the killer on it.
Nice and yellow then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, so you enjoy Florida, Norm. We appreciate the call.
I'm jelly.
Thank you.
Me too.
I'm jelly too, and I'm so happy he's listening, though. That's very kind of him. All right, we're going to take one more call as we wrap things up this morning. We have Shirley in Canton. You are on the air with Roar's Nursery. Go ahead.
Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Good morning. I have a question for Roar's. I did not cut off my English ivy or my butterfly bush. I didn't cut those down. Is that okay not to cut them down? Because I just got them this year.
I would say it would be fine. Usually you do cut butterfly bush more in the springtime, too, especially if they're a newer plant.
Yeah, the ivy, usually you wait to see if there's any tip dieback on the ivy, and you trim it right after winter's over. So sometime, I'd say, around the beginning of April on both those plants. You can do a little trimming and shaping. You can also scratch the bark on the butterfly bush with like a thumbnail and see if it's green underneath. If it's green underneath, that means that stem lived through the winter. Sometimes they live in the winter, sometimes they don't. Every winter and every plant's kind of unique and different there. But you can trim it down at that point if you choose to, or you can leave the top on if it's still green. If it's brown, then you do want to trim it off.
Okay. Oh, well, that sounds good because, you know, even now the ivy looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can sometimes stay somewhat green, which is nice. Yeah, and then you'll see a little bit of dieback in the spring, and that's when you want to, you can trim that off.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
All right, Matt, give us locations and phone numbers if folks have any questions or want to come and see you.
Absolutely. We have two Roar's Nursery locations, 5357 Everhard Road in Canton and 7211 Portage Street in Massillon.
All right, you guys have a great week. I'll see you on Groundhog's Day.
Sounds good.
Talk to you then. Bye.